You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Anna Brundage is a tall, talented, redheaded rock musician, but although she was a fast-rising star, she walked away from her career in music. Anna is the protagonist of Wonderland, Stacey DeRasmo's latest novel. She wonders whether the life she's built is the one she wants and if the life she wants is worth it as she mounts her comeback at age 44. Along the way, we get glimpses of her life on the road and the pressures of human relationships in the entertainment world. It's published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Stacey DeRasmo back to our show.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. You've described Anna as living in the meditative imperfect. What do you mean by that?
The book is written in fragments, and those fragments are sometimes in the present moment, sometimes in the past, sometimes kind of in the future, and some of them are in that tense that I call the meditative imperfect, where they're sort of reflections that are not necessarily happening in the narrative time of the novel, but that are part of Anna's consciousness.
And did you write it that way?
Or I did.
So you didn't write certain things chronologically and then intersperse things that you wrote later?
No, because the fragments always, to me, kind of bounced off of one another, and there was a kind of an energy in getting from one to another.
Is it something that you knew you were going to do from the start?
Sadly, I did.
A lot of writers start off with one thing, a first person, then move to third person,
right.
Second person.
Right. No, I always knew that I wanted it to be in this fragmentary structure. I'm a huge fan of Joan Didion's Play It As It Lays, of Marguerite Duras's Lover, of other books written that way. And I knew that I wanted to do this. I also knew that it was possibly a really huge mistake.
Well, you're happy with it now,
yeah,
aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
All's well that ends
yes.
well, as somebody once wrote.
Yeah.
and why about a musician?
Yeah, that's a good question. My musical talent is zero. My musical aspirations are zero. I've never been in a band. I couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. I like to karaoke. That's about it.
So you haven't talked to Amy Tan about the experience?
No. No, I admire her for doing that. I always knew that my character would be a musician and that she would be a woman musician in this particular circumstance.
And somebody who'd been a rock star.
I mean, we say rock star in the flap copy. She's really a kind of an indie singer-songwriter star, right? Like an Amy Mann or a Beth Gibbons.
But they have huge followings.
They have huge followings, yeah.
And I was wondering whether she's actually based on anybody, whether you were thinking of anybody when you, like Kathleen Hanna.
Yeah, Kathleen Hanna. I didn't have a specific model for her. I mean, early on I was intrigued by the way Patti Smith made a successful comeback and has made a successful comeback. Anna isn't really like Patti, but I was interested in that story.
But Patti and a number of other women who have had careers have written books, and
absolutely.
I suspect you did research.
Absolutely. Juliana Hatfield's memoir is fantastic. Actually, Keith Richards' memoir is fantastic. Pamela DeBar's I'm With the Band, which even though she was a groupie, she has a lot of incredible documentary detail about that world that was terrific.
Anna's father is a famous sculptor who once sawed a train in half.
Yeah.
Did Anna always get along with him? There's always that problem of being the child of someone who's
right.
famous and wanting to make it yourself in the arts.
Right. Well, I was also very intrigued by this phenomenon of people who are artists from artistic families. I don't come from an artistic family, but I was thinking of someone like Kiki Smith, who's a visual artist, and her father, Tony Smith, who is a huge kind of conceptual sculptor. And this question of how you find your voice in a family of really strong artistic voices. And no, Anna doesn't always get along with her father. They don't entirely understand one another.
And Kiki Smith's work is nothing like her father's.
It's nothing like
her
father's.
In this case, Anna goes into music instead of going into art.
Right. A different medium altogether that works in a completely different way.
But the children of famous people often have to deal with the problem of accusations that they made it because their parents are famous.
Yeah, exactly. That Anna doesn't have that problem quite as much because she's in music and her father is in sculpture. But the burden that she struggles with is that her father revolutionized the field. He was kind of, in my mind, he was one of the big sort of minimalist sculpture guys of the 70s. And for Anna, there's the kind of continual question of, can she be as powerful in music as he was in sculpture?
On the other hand, her mother makes curtains.
Well, her mother is also an artist, but she's less well-known than the father, and the family travels around. The father cuts up a lot of big structures, buildings, trains, bridges, old warehouses, things like that. And the mother kind of trails along. They all sort of go along with him in this international art star world that he's in. And one of the things the mother does is make these curtains, which Anna she hates the curtains. She hates the whole thing with the curtains.
So she has problems identifying with either of her parents.
Both probably too much identification and too little.
She keeps a composition book of her tours,
yeah,
which, of course, is helpful because you're a writer.
Right.
How does she think of herself and her past as she's gearing up for this comeback?
Yeah. I think that one of the things that's going on in the book is she's trying to figure out who she's been in the past and to think about who she might want to be in the present and the future. She was a person who hit the mark for a certain kind of indie elite at a certain moment. I mean, I was really struck today. I opened up the Times and there's an article about how Sarah McLachlan, Tori Amos, and Natalie Merchant are all coming out with records after many years away. You mentioned Kathleen Hanna, who's now on tour with her new band, the Julie Ruin, in Europe. These are all four of these are women who really spoke to people. But who can they be now?
Well, musicians who had a moment mm-hmm. are sometimes stuck in the past.
Absolutely.
Their fans want to hear the big hits from
right.
when they were 22 years old, and now they're 40 right. years old, and they're still forced to sing those songs. At the same time, they want to do the new material, the thing
right.
that reflects who they are today.
Right, exactly. I mean, there's both the one's natural, maybe human, wish to remain the same. And also, but as you say, the fans wish to, you know, like Tina Turner, sing Proud Mary, Mick Jagger, sing Satisfaction. And I can imagine the ambivalence that performers feel having, you know, being asked at that.
Another change is when you're young and you're starting, you perform in dives and all sorts mm-hmm. of places that you might not want to go to mm-hmm. later. There was a major drug scene.
Yeah.
You might not want to take drugs anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's very difficult. How do you continue to find that edge, to find that spark, to get to that place? You know, if it's your doesn't even matter quite as much how old you are as how many tours have you been on? How many times have you done this?
My guest is Stacey D'Erasmo, whose latest novel is called Wonderland. Well, during her record Whale, a lot of cocaine was consumed.
Yeah.
And there's that whole matter of whether you need drugs
right.
to make art that a lot of musicians get caught up in.
Yeah, yeah. She's not a huge druggie, but definitely when she's making her first record Whale, you know, she's down on her luck. She's got no money. She her own band has kicked her out and reformed without her, and she basically holes up in this studio at night with one sound engineer, snorts a ton of cocaine, and cranks the record out in something like 7 days. I think that I can understand, having spoken to musicians and gone on tour with a band for a little while, how it is that you might want to get some help to stay on that knife edge, particularly when you're a performer.
But she walks away from it.
She does. She does.
Because that knife's edge is scary?
No, I think that innately she's not an addict, honestly. Not all musicians are addicts, but I think she kind of ages out of it. And also she has enough edges within herself, perhaps without having to induce them chemically. She's pretty edgy.
So she is making this comeback. She mm-hmm. describes her new outfit as making her look like a knowing stork.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's got this.
She's not a kid anymore.
No, she's not a kid anymore. So she's got this. She's got like three different outfits that sort of suit her up, right? Like they're kind of closely fit and tight and sort of to the wrist and to the neck. Yeah, a knowing stork. Yeah.
And while she's playing a not so great show in Hamburg, Germany, mm-hmm. which is a European tour, mm-hmm. she and a bandmate seem to connect with only one member of the audience.
Yeah.
Well, there's that cliche about your art being worth it if you just touch one person. But if you're a performer, it doesn't always work for you.
Well, what I find absolutely breathtaking about performers that's very different from what I have to do as a writer is for performers like that, musicians, actors, it happens in the moment on the stage. It is so fast. And you connect with the audience or you don't. And it's either the longest hour and 15 minutes of your life or it's fantastic. But that's it. It's very fleeting. It's very fast. It's really a high wire act.
And she says later in the novel, some performers say that at every show they pick out a person in the audience, one face, and do the show for that person.
Mm-hmm.
But that suggests that that's not the way she really thinks.
Well, I think that I don't think that for her that's so much her way. She's a little more interested in kind of the room as a whole. And she talks about that, too, that it's like getting the vibe of the night.
She says, did Janis Joplin actually say this? Freedom is not just another word for nothing left to lose?
No.
It's rigorous?
No. No, she's saying that. Uh-huh. She's saying freedom
is... Chris Christopherson and Janis Joplin were wrong. Freedom is not just another word for nothing left to lose.
No. No, it's a lot more energetic than that.
In the New Yorker in March, you examined the evolution of female artists and musicians compared mm-hmm. to male ones. Obviously, mm-hmm. you were thinking a lot about that while you were writing this book. You wrote, Joni Mitchell and Neil Young, Toni Morrison and Philip Roth, Ronnie Horne and Eric Fischel, in each medium, popular music, literature, and visual art, respectively, the woman has broken form, shed a skin with each phase of her career, whereas the man has returned to ever-deepening iterations of the sound or sentence or imagery with which he began. Why do you think that is?
That's a really excellent question. It's important to say that I was writing that piece not to say this is what always happens, right? I'm writing about a kind of a tendency that I've noticed, and it's funny because in the comments section to that New Yorker piece, there were like 100, not 100, but there were a bunch of comments from Neil Young fans saying, he's a god and you're wrong. But I really wasn't.
You weren't criticizing him. You were just simply saying he goes deeper into the music he began with.
Exactly, which is part of the great pleasure of that entire body of work. The piece really examines that question, why, and where I, what I.
But do you think that's always true? There are female artists who continue doing the same thing.
Absolutely. I'm not saying that it's every single one, every single time.
And there are male artists who keep on reinventing themselves.
Absolutely. But I was talking about a kind of a drift toward that, if you will, or a leaning toward that. And I think that it just may be that for women, we are a little more unsettled in the world in general. And that often leads to a kind of a willingness or a capacity to be unsettled in form as well, to change form, to change our art.
Stacey D'Erasmo is the author of a number of novels, The Sky Below, A Seahorse Year, and Tea. She also contributed to the Modern Love column in the New York Times. I'm not going to get into that because we don't have any more time, but I hope you and your Buddhist monk are doing well. The book, her latest novel is called Wonderland. It's published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you.